A currency war summit in South Korea.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Finance ministers and central bankers from the G20 nations are meeting in South Korea today. At the top of their agenda, the question of how to head off a global currency war. Joining us live with more is Marketplace's Stephen Beard. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Jeremy.
So, Stephen, what are the expectations from this meeting in Seoul today?
Hopes are not high. This really is a dialogue of the deaf in South Korea. The U.S. is saying again to China, you've got to stop holding your currency down to help your exporters. China is saying again to the U.S., look who's talking. You're driving your currency lower by printing more dollars.
Everybody's trying to have the lowest currency to boost their exports. Are we expecting anything significant to come out of this meeting?
There is a draft agreement circulating. G20 members are being invited to sign up and commit themselves not to do what you say, competitively devalue their currencies. But even if they do sign, I don't think there are many currency analysts here in London who believe it'll make any difference whatsoever to what China and the US are doing. All thunder and no rain is a Chinese expression, I think.
Is anything else on the agenda at this meeting, Stephen?
Yes, there are other items. And oddly enough, I mean, there may be more progress on some of these other items lower down the agenda, such as IMF reform, giving greater weight to big emerging economies like China and India, and global financial regulation. We may learn this weekend whether the big emerging economies will fully sign up to Basel III, the planned new global rules on bank capital.
Okay, Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, Jeremy.
And some good financial news today for the U.S. insurance giant AIG, and potentially also for the U.S. Treasury and us taxpayers. AIG will sell off its valuable Asian insurance business, a move that will jumpstart its plan to pay back more than $100 billion in taxpayer bailout money. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
AIG was rescued with around $180 billion in taxpayer money as the financial crisis gathered speed 2 years ago. Government officials believed if the giant insurer was allowed to collapse under the weight of bad investments, it would have a devastating effect across global markets. But AIG's core insurance business has remained strong, especially in Asia, where the potential to sell new life insurance policies to a growing middle class is huge. And that explains AIG's success today with the initial public offering of its Asian insurance subsidiary called AIA. The IPO will be worth as much as $20 billion. That money will help AIG make the largest repayment of bailout money to date back to the U.S. Treasury. It's still a drop in the bucket, though. Most of the money AIG owes the government will be recouped as the Treasury sells off its 80% stake in the company on the stock market. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And let's check global stock markets. Asian markets are mixed. Tokyo's Nikkei is up about 0.5%. In Europe, markets are down at this hour, a fraction of a percent across the continent. The Dow jumped 38 points yesterday, ended the day at 11,146.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by MassMutual, with financial professionals nationwide who are trained to serve the unique financial needs of their clients at massmutual.com. By Novo Nordisk, since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. And by Gather.com, the social network where people can make new friends who share their interests. People talking about today's news at news.gather.com.
Taylor Swift sure knows how to promote her music. The country singer-songwriter is coming out with a new album on Monday. She's already released one single, which you'd know if you were one of her 4.5 million Twitter followers. She's brought a new mastery of social networking to country music, and it's paying off for her. Here to discuss is Pinky Gonzalez, a professor of digital media marketing at Belmont University in Nashville. Pinky, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jeremy. It's exciting to be here.
Well, I was in Nashville recently, and everybody was talking about how Taylor Swift had attracted all these new young fans to country music because she's so well-versed in social networking sites like Twitter and Facebook. What do you make of that?
The reason she has that distinction, probably more than many in her generation that are coming up now is that she was already active on MySpace when she became popular. So where a lot of industry executives, to put them in one basket, where they were trying to figure out how should this be used, when should this be used, should we spend any money on it, she was already there using it intuitively.
All right, well, let's get specific here. I've got some of the recent tweets from Taylor's Twitter feed, and let me just read some of them to you, and you can tell me how these help her connect with her fans. Quote, baking pumpkin spice cookies with cream cheese icing because I'm very excited because a new song is coming out on iTunes at midnight. Let me give you another one. Sitting backstage at the Opry. It's been rebuilt since the flood and looks better than new. Abigail flew in to visit. I like today so much.
So personal. She's having a conversation with her friends. And that is the magic. If you compare that to what, say, Kenny Chesney is doing, I would argue that Kenny is also doing a good job with Twitter, but his tweets tend to be more business. This is playing on my radio station right now. It's more data, and you can tell that he has less affinity for the application.
5 years ago, nobody was on Twitter. Do you think that musicians are going to be using it in the same way 5 years from now?
I think musicians will be using whatever Twitter is in 5 years from now, but I doubt it will look like what it looks like today. When I started teaching at Belmont in the fall of 2008, I didn't have a single student that was using Twitter. Today, 100% of my class either uses it or intentionally does not, but there's nobody that didn't know what it was coming into the class.
Pinky Gonzalez, thanks so much for talking with us.
It's a pleasure and an honor, Jeremy. Thank you for having me.
We were both young when I first saw you. I close my eyes and the flashback starts. I'm standing there.
And better late than never, I've started a Twitter page of my own. It's at Jeremy Hobson, at Jeremy Hobson. My new life goal is to surpass Taylor in number of followers. So it looks like I have about 4.5 million to go. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
Plenty of us get our daily dose of caffeine at Starbucks, but have you ever considered branching out a little bit?
Well, I go there for my coffee. I don't really want to go there for my beer and wine, too. I just feel kind of dirty.
Oh, it's not just the coffee anymore. I'm Kai Rizdal. That story and the rest of the day's business news next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.